good morning to you. Good morning. How are you? Sunday, 20th of August 2017. Miserable old Manchester morning. It's horrible. It's raining. It's miserable. It's dark. It's dull. But welcome to Sunday View. Thanks for choosing this programme live right now on davidicke.com, richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and TuneIn Radio. Got some interesting things to discuss with you over the course of the next 40 minutes to an hour. I think it might be a bit shorter today, but interesting things indeed. As usual, if you'd like to get involved with me, tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Couldn't be simpler. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Tweet me and we'll have a chat. You and I. Welcome to Sunday View.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Indeed. You can email Richie at richieallen.co.uk as well if you like. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk and get in touch with me. Sunday View is live right now on davidicke.com, richieallen.co.uk and Fab Radio 2.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
And I say this every week, and I will do as long as this program is on the air. Bookmark davidicke.com/headlines, because pretty much everything we talk about today is covered in depth at davidicke.com as well. Before we go any further, I didn't get a chance to do this. Well, this is my first chance to do it. I want to thank Jamie Icke for coming up from Derby on Friday to present the first Jamie Icke Friday Night Phone-In programme. Thought he did really well. That's in no way to patronise the man at all. He's never done anything like that, really. He's hugely interested, of course, in current affairs and the alternative opinions of people who research these issues in the independent media. He produces and manages, basically, the David Icke Worldwide Wake Up Tour. So he was perfect, really, to do something like that on Friday. I thought he did terrifically well, fielding the phone calls and bringing a lot of really interesting stories with him to the show. So we'll do that again in the near future. They're off to Canada tomorrow for a couple of weeks because David is speaking in Toronto and in Vancouver as well. Check out davidicke.com and theworldwidewakeup.com for all the details. But a big shout out to Jamie Icke. Really glad he did that, and I look forward to him doing it again in the future. Cheers, mate, and have a good trip to Canada. Fantastic times to be travelling to Canada with everything that's going on there. Here's a question for you before we look at the front pages of the national broadsheet and tabloid newspapers this Sunday. Here's a question for you. It's a loaded question, I know. I know what I'm like. I have an agenda as well, as much as anybody else does. Why were Premier League football players wearing armbands this weekend in support of the victims of the Barcelona attack, where 13 people were killed and many more injured, and a young British boy is missing after a van ploughed into pedestrians at Las Ramblas? Why were Premier League footballers wearing the armbands? Did they know people who died? Were they personally connected to some of those who died last week? Thursday, wasn't it? Isn't there something hypocritical about this? And I know some people don't like to hear this, but it's a fair question. Islamic State, IS, whatever you want to call them, ISIS, have been murdering Syrians for several years, Iraqis. We've seen terrorist bombs in Iraq and Afghanistan that regularly kill dozens of people. Regularly. Even very recently. But we don't wear any armbands. We don't mourn. We don't have any vigils for those who die in those terrorist attacks. So what's going on? What's going on, I ask you? Programming is what's going on. Programming. We, you and I, are being programmed, I think anyway, to accept that what happens in France, what happens in Belgium, in Spain, in London, programming us to accept that we are all one. We are all Europeans. All of us. An attack on one is therefore an attack on all. We must identify as European. Je suis Paris. I'm surprised we haven't been hearing Soy Barça, Soy Barcelona, Soy España. We probably are. Maybe I've missed it. I don't know. It's kind of pro-European one nation propaganda. And it's one of the reasons, I think, why all of these news outlets rush to the scene and broadcast from there for 3 days each time. Do you ever notice that as well? It's 3 days. It's almost like the 3 days of mourning. There's the number three. I'm sure numerologists will tell me it's significant. 3 days. And then, anyway. So look, it's just my opinion. There's a mass going on today. The Spanish royal family have turned up. And you see people turning up to the shrine at Las Ramblas. And we saw this in Manchester. Now, I was accused of being a piss-poor journalist. And sometimes there's good reason to call me a piss-poor journalist. I can accept the slings and arrows. But I didn't attend. I didn't go and have a look at St. Peter's Square in Manchester. I didn't go down to the shrine, even though I'm only a few minutes away from it. I couldn't be bothered. So people turn up to these shrines and they sing songs, don't they? I remember hilariously, the traveller, Paddy Doherty, was there shouting, "We have no fear." We've seen that today, by the way. We've seen it over the last 2 days. "We have no fear," chant all of these people lighting candles at the shrines. Programming. The same slogan in Manchester, "We have no fear." I was in the northern quarter of the city yesterday having a late lunch with the future Mrs. Allen in a Spanish tapas place, interestingly enough. And there's a mural now. There's a mural with the Manchester worker bee image and the caption, hashtag, "We have no fear. We have no fear." So I would say this has been carefully coordinated by those who are scripting the never-ending drama that we're living. We're like, at the moment, we're kind of like an extra. We're like an extra on set, but we're moving more towards being not so much the leading actor or actress, but, you know, the supporting actor, supporting actress in this drama. Thousands turning up to stand and look at flowers. They're standing there looking at flowers, lighting candles for people they never knew. It's a psychosis, isn't it, really? It's easy to say sheep. It's easy to say sheep, maybe. Maybe I shouldn't say sheep. It's mass psychosis. Now, at this point of the proceedings, somebody ordinarily sends me a message saying, "You're a heartless bastard, Richie. It's about empathy." And you know, I was thinking about this morning. Of course people shudder and feel nauseous when they think of other people being mown down by a van or blown to pieces at a concert. Of course I do. You know, listen now, this is not me. But we were at Take That on the Friday and on the Sunday, or was it the Monday? On the Monday, those people were killed at Ariana Grande. So you do think, Jesus, if that guy had went into the building when we were leaving, we could have been caught up on it. And you feel sick and you feel horrified, of course. There is a traumatic aspect to it. But you know, I was thinking again today. I do a bit of thinking when I'm on my own. We saw terrorism on these islands for years. People were disgusted by it. Old men blown up playing dominoes in bars in London and in Birmingham. But juxtapose the way people reacted then as opposed to the way they react now. See, now we have trauma-based mind control. Those creating the trauma today are using it to control the minds and the behaviour of the populations subjected to it. And it sickens me to see people like zombies at these candlelit vigils. They're confused. And it's not about me saying that, you know, I don't have any empathy. Or I don't care about people that I don't know, because it sounds like that sometimes. That Richie Allen guy, what a scumbag. If he doesn't know you, he doesn't care what happens to you. Of course I do. But don't, you're not going to stand around at vigils for hours chanting, "We have no fear." That's hypnotic, trauma-based mind control, I believe. Nah, what do I know? 9 minutes past 11. This is Sunday View with Richie Allen, live on davidicke.com, on richieallen.co.uk and Fab Radio 2. Let's have a look at the papers. Let's get the Sunday Times right out of the way. Sunday Times front page headline, "Queen will not stand down for Prince Charles." Who gives a knob? Who gives a Mickey? I couldn't care less. It's just more fawning royal crap from the Sunday Times. But there's an interesting story hidden in the top right-hand corner of the front page of the Sunday Times. ISIS funding run from Cardiff office. The Welsh! I knew it! The Taffies! Anyway, calm down, dear. The story is, and I'll read you some of the story, ISIS used a network of companies operating out of an office in Cardiff. ISIS used a network of companies out of an office in Cardiff to ship military-grade equipment to Spain and to finance terror plots against the West. FBI documents seen by the Sunday Times disclose. The surveillance technology dispatched to Spain, where 14 people were killed last week, is understood to be linked to the development by the terrorist group of weaponized drones. Ooh, ISIS and drones. The FBI says it was capable of identifying target locations. An affiliated firm was used to transfer thousands of pounds in cash to an American extremist in Maryland, who later told how he dreamt of carrying out a gun massacre in a church. Other purchases said to be routed through Cardiff, include even orders for bug sweep units and software to help launch rockets. Investigators say the password for one email account was KillObama77. Right. Okay. The shipment, which was routed through Cardiff and ended up in Spain in the summer of 2015, was delivered to Madrid, according to US court documents. It remains unclear who received the order and whether the equipment remained in the country. Now, there's several ways you can look at this story. Way number one, who benefits if there is a massive scare, a massive outcry about an office in Cardiff being used to route equipment to ISIS factions? Who benefits? I would suggest those who wish to privatise and control the internet. Those who wish to justify more and more and more surveillance, I would say. Right? I'm not saying this didn't happen now, far from it. But I'm saying who benefits when stories like this go out there? Okay, we know that in the forthcoming parliament, in the autumn parliament, we know the UK government, as well as obviously playing their part in the Brexit negotiations, but they're going to take on online extremism. So this is a great story for them, that there's an office in Cardiff passing on orders for the jihadists. From the Sunday Times, owned by Rupert Murdoch and controlled by News Corp. Pinch of salt, I would say. Pinch of salt. Also in the Sunday Times today, a story which I know you'll be interested in, and I know you'll have an opinion on it. The headline is, Police launch paedophile raids to head off vigilantes. This is James Gillespie writing in The Times. And he says, or he writes, a new team of undercover police officers will seek to track and to trap paedophiles grooming children online in a £20 million initiative, which is also aimed at curbing the activities of vigilantes. A 12-month pilot scheme in Norfolk led to 43 arrests and will now be launched across the country. Senior officers have made it clear they do not appreciate vigilantes who go online pretending to be children before arranging to meet and then arrest suspected paedophiles. Dark Justice, now I know you've heard of Dark Justice, it's a prominent vigilante group. They said the police move wouldn't deter them. And I'll quote Dark Justice. Well, the article quotes Dark Justice. This is what Dark Justice said. The government have had the time to tackle this epidemic for a long time, but simply haven't. It has been proven that no more than 30 officers are online at any one time tackling this problem throughout the whole country. So the public have started chipping in where they can, and we are highly passionate about what we are doing to tackle this program head on. Due to government cuts, the police have become reactive, not proactive like ourselves. The only way to tackle this problem is by doing it head on and not beating around the bush. So just in case you haven't heard of groups like Dark Justice, what they do is they go online and they basically entrap child groomers by pretending to be children, by uploading profiles with photographs that make it look like they are children. They then participate in conversations with the would-be child groomer, the would-be paedophile, and then they lure the paedophile into meeting them at a location. When the paedophile or would-be paedophile turns up at the location, the Dark Justice vigilantes are there, they make videos, they take photographs, they call the person out, and as far as I understand, they do pass the information on to the police. What do you think of that? Let me know. Listen, we talk a lot about, obviously, child abuse on this programme. It horrifies everybody. Nobody needs to virtue signal about how much they're horrified by child abuse. Let's just park that to one side. What do you think of these guys doing that? I don't know. I'm not thrilled about it. Particularly as because when you follow the yellow brick road of child abuse, it ends up with the government. It ends up with senior government ministers. It ends up with the establishment, the political class, and it ends up with the ruling classes. It ends up with royalty, and it ends up with the captains of industry. So if these guys are getting Dirty John, who downloads child abuse images, yeah, that's great, but there's a much bigger picture. So maybe I don't know. What do you think? I'm not a big fan of vigilantism. Simon Bailey, of course, the Norfolk Chief Constable, says they don't like it. They say don't take justice into your own hands. They say you could undermine our investigations and you could also wrongly accuse somebody of paedophilia. You know, it's basically a stain that you can never get rid of, and people who live nearby them might harm those people and there might be suicides as a result of it. That's what the police say, Dark Justice say. We're going to continue doing what we do. Let me know what you think about it, and don't go all Helen Lovejoy on me. Won't somebody please think of the children? Let's not go all Helen Lovejoy. Let me know what you think about it at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. 17 and a half minutes past the hour. The Sunday Express and the Sunday Mail, or the Mail on Sunday, lead with the exact same story. The story of the 7-year-old British boy, Julian Cadman. His mother, who was very badly injured in a hospital in Barcelona, has been pleading for news of what happened to him. He's been missing since the van ploughed into the crowds in Las Ramblas on Thursday. The UK Prime Minister Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn, lots of people have spoken about it. Where could the boy be? His mum is in hospital. His dad has arrived in Spain. Where could he be? If he was killed by the van, there would be a body. The Spanish police, the Barcelona police are saying, I should say the Catalonian police, they're saying, well, we've gotten all the bodies of those who died. We've identified everybody. There isn't anybody else that has died at the scene. So where is the young boy? Was he abducted in the melee? Jesus Christ, if that's the case, God love him and God love the family. Nobody seems to know what's going on with 7-year-old Julian Cadman. The best of luck to his family and to those looking for him. So that's the Sunday Mail and the Sunday Express. They're covering that extensively. Now, it's 19 minutes past the hour. There is a very interesting story inside the Sunday Mail, and it's called Why I Know That ISIS Is a Problem of My Religion. And it's written by a woman called Sarah Khan, who's the director of counter-extremism group Inspire. When I come back from this very short break, I'm going to read you some of what Sarah Khan has written today. It's a provocative article. We'll have a read of it and we'll pick the bones out of it, you and I, on your Richie Allen Show, Sunday View, on davidicke.com and richieallen.co.uk. Stay with me, back in a minute, and I'll read your tweets as well.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Sunday View. Thanks for tuning in. I mean that. It's not just a radio cliche. It really touches me that you bother to tune in and join me on Sunday mornings. Thanks for doing it. I'm thrilled. Good morning to Jackie Colleton. Good morning to Steve Burns. Steve, thanks for the kind words. Thanks for listening to the programme. I mean that. These are people tweeting the programme as well. Right now, good morning to These Are The Damned. It's a lovely sunny morning in Birmingham, Richie. I'm watching Sunday football at the moment. Watching a bit of Sunday footy with the old earphones plugged in to listen to the Richie Allen Show. Good stuff, Steve. David Stanford says, Richie, they're trying to promote a world community and every incident will be called terror. That is absolutely on the money, David, in my opinion. Shona Dryden, good morning, Shona. Richie, it's terrible that Grace Mugabe was given political immunity after assaulting a South African woman. Rules for some and rules for others. That's right. That's a story, obviously, out of Zimbabwe that we didn't cover late last week. But you're absolutely right, Shona. Of course, 100% as well. Spirit Samba tweets, it's all one big psyop on the people. Fake sympathy for people they don't know. Thousands killed abroad and they don't give a shit, says Spirit Samba as well. Busy tweets, it's definitely sheeple. We should probably... I know I talk about we shouldn't tell people what they should and shouldn't say. We shouldn't limit people's choice of language and words. But maybe if we want to reach them, maybe we shouldn't call them sheep. Maybe I don't know. Hi to Brian Baru. Brian Jordan Maxwell will be back on this programme really soon. Hi to Dweezil Armstrong. My great friend Gilad Atzmon is listening in this morning. Gilad, good morning, mate. Check out gilad.co.uk, by the way, top man. And Steve, Leeds United fan. How you doing, Steve? Richie, weeding out the pedos can only be a good thing. Maybe their efforts will lead up the yellow brick road. Fair enough, Steve. Fair point. Thanks for tweeting the programme today. So, the Mail on Sunday. The headline, Why I Know That ISIS Is a Problem of My Religion. This is inside the paper. This is a guest article by Sarah Khan. She's the director of a counter-extremist think tank called Inspire. So what has she said today exactly? I'm going to read some of the article as if I am her. So this is her writing in the Mail on Sunday. I run an organisation which works to oppose Islamist extremism, and I've seen firsthand the reality of radicalisation of a young people in Birmingham, Bradford and Luton. It is clear to me that we must also look at the wider context of why so many young people are seduced by extreme Salafi jihadism. Only by knowing the nature of the beast can we know how to combat it. To do that, we must recognise that despite the oft-repeated claims that there is a clash between Islam and the West, the real battle is within Islam. Islam has more than a billion followers, but large swathes of today's Muslims hold competing and often conflicting claims of what values and principles the faith stands for. The result is that contemporary Islam is suffering a colossal crisis of identity, which has created a vacuum. Islamist extremism and the terror it incubates has helped to fill the vacuum. Millions of Muslims across the world subscribe to interpretations of Islam that endorse coexistence, humanity, tolerance and compassion. They genuinely believe Islam is a religion of peace. It's why for centuries Christians, Muslims and other minorities lived together peacefully in many Middle Eastern countries before the ascent of ISIS. When my parents moved from Pakistan to Bradford in the 1960s, they and many others of their generation had no expectation of Sharia law or wearing the veil. They did not believe Islam was incompatible with a secular democracy. They were comfortable with being British Muslims, proud to integrate with their adopted country, while keeping their religion. However, equally a growing number of Muslims here and abroad have a different understanding. Their beliefs are based on a politicised puritanical ideology which is anti-Western, advocates religious supremacy, intolerance, the requirement to live in a caliphate and an opposition to democracy and fundamental human rights. They look to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who once claimed Islam was never a religion of peace. Islam is the religion of fighting. And she goes on to write in the Mail on Sunday, Sarah Khan, listen up, this was once a minority interpretation. But over the past 40 years, aggressive Saudi proselytising of Wahhabism, the tyranny of authoritarian leaders in Muslim countries, and the propaganda opportunity provided by Western intervention in Muslim countries has seen an exponential worldwide growth. In 2015, the security organisation the Soufan Group revealed 27,000 Muslims from 86 countries had been drawn to ISIS's so-called caliphate. But rather than being an authentic representation of Islam, the fundamentalist ideology of Salafi Islamism is actually a far-right interpretation of it. The ideology of the Salafists has won over an increasing number of young Muslims who misguidedly believe that Salafi Islamism represents normative Islam. You might expect second or third generation immigrants to be well integrated into a British society, but it is among these young people that radicalism is spreading. They are of a generation where the internet is more influential than the mosque. Just like the white supremacists in the USA, they have been exposed to YouTube preachers of hate. Sarah Khan, writing in the Mail on Sunday today. Now, she goes on to say, ISIS is from within us and is our problem. By us and by our, she means Muslims. Okay, so we'll stop her there. It's an interesting read. Provocative read. A good read, I think. Sarah Khan, director of anti-extremism think tank Inspire. She's right and she's wrong. How many times do we say this on this program? These black and white extremes. My dot's the only dot, says David. She's right, I think, that there is a problem. She's right that the Saudis are proselytising Wahhabism and have been doing it for decades. And she's right that authoritarian leaders in some countries in the Middle East, in Muslim countries, have pushed this right-wing narrow ideology. These hardline regimes, to use the awful MSM mainstream media word for governments, these regimes as they call them, as they are called, countries like Libya, Iran, Syria, Syria under Bashar al-Assad's father, Iraq, the kingdoms of Bahrain, Saudi Arabia. They existed for years. They are not new countries. They didn't just prop up in the last 10, 12 years. Saudi Arabia has been around a long time. So has Bahrain, Syria, ancient countries, Persia, Iran, ancient countries. And as she pointed out in her article, they existed for years and years and years without ever presenting a threat to Western countries, right? Islamic or Islamist terrorism as a concept didn't exist, did it? Islamic terror as a concept didn't exist until recently, right? And don't throw Lockerbie at me either, Pan Am Flight 103. The CIA, as far as I can tell, were behind Flight 103's explosion over Lockerbie in 1988. And I know there was the first World Trade Center bombing, but again, I'm not sure there was any real Islamic terror aspect to that either, in my opinion. The narrative of the threat of radical jihadism, the threat of radical Islam, was created by, and for some of you this won't be news, for some of you it will, this narrative that we are at risk of radical Islam, we are in danger from radical jihadism who want to create a caliphate. This was initially created by the Project for a New American Century, a think tank, of course, of rabid Zionist neocons. They created the threat of radical Islam. These were the men who planned and executed 9/11. The Zionist neocons, with their friends in agencies like Mossad and their friends in Saudi Arabia. Because they replaced the threat of communist Russia, which obviously diminished after the fall of the Berlin Wall and the breaking up of the Soviet Union, the Balkan states. Blah, 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 Richie. I know some of you know this and you think it's basic. But it isn't basic, it's important. They replaced the threat of Red Russia with the threat of radical Islam. So 9/11 was planned and orchestrated, massive trauma-based mind control, which led to the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan. Iraq and Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11. General Wesley Clark, of course, saw the documents that laid out the plans for so-called regime change in seven countries after the obviously now historic and very important events of September the 11th. And in case you don't remember what Wesley Clark said, this was him talking with Democracy Now.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, No. He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, No. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They've just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
Right. All of those countries. But to support the takeover of those countries, you needed to present a narrative that the public would buy. You needed to convince millions and millions of people they were in danger from radical Islam. And this is how incredibly detailed the plans were. And this is what most people, your friends, your neighbours, your families, they cannot get their heads around this. They cannot understand this. Even great men like Gerald Celente, great guy, great friend of mine for many years. Very intelligent. He's certainly no less intelligent than me, but they don't understand it. When you tell them about the de-bathification of Iraq after our militaries had bombed Iraq back to the Stone Age, when you tell them that it was done so that hardline Salafists from Saudi Arabia, mostly from Saudi Arabia, could fill that vacuum in order to create failed states. People like Gerald, to his credit, and others would say, to his credit because they believe it, even though I think they're wrong, they will say, these guys are not that clever, Richie. They don't see that far ahead. It's about money and it's about greed and power and oil. It isn't. To destroy the apparatus of the Iraqi state, the de-bathification process, as we call it, was to create a failed state. You then have genuine horror you could point to. It doesn't always have to be hoax terror, false flag terror. It can be real, and then you justify your permanent presence in those countries. Because, dear listener, it is Sunday, August 20th, 2017. The UK and the US has never left Iraq, never left Afghanistan, and has never left Libya. It might seem like we have done, but we haven't, because we were never there to bring democracy or to change those countries. We used to think that we wanted to replace those leaders like Gaddafi and Saddam with our own puppets, but we didn't really. If you look at the Hamid Karzai situation in Afghanistan, we didn't. We were there to ensure the growth of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Madness. So within that, you see the growth of the dominance of Salafists and Wahhabists. This is true. It took me years to figure this out. I was like, what the feck is going on here? It looks like they want to put their own puppet in so that they can steal the oil. No! They want mayhem. Carnage. So what happens when there is mayhem and carnage? We'll come to that in a minute. In the meantime, George Soros and other NGOs, not just Soros and other groups, they create phony revolutions, Egypt, Tunisia and Syria. Phony revolutions. They arm people, call them moderate rebels. They're not really. They are these nutter jihadists who lay waste to Syria. But what are the nutter jihadists doing besides beheading people, putting videos on the internet and murdering thousands? What are they also doing? This is where it gets very creepy. They are indoctrinating and brainwashing thousands of young teenage boys. They are. We'll come to that in a minute. So ISIS make people run for their lives into a Europe that opens its doors. These are the same people, by the way. Soros is behind a lot of this. Even Henry Kissinger. All the Rothschild Zionists. You can name them Angela Merkel, Guy Verhofstadt, Jean-Claude Juncker. They allow millions into Europe. This is true. Millions. 1 million in Germany alone. And among those are the terrorists. They themselves armed. And back to the young men who've been indoctrinated and brainwashed by ISIS. ISIS, by the way, is the CIA and Mossad. That's what controls ISIS. The Wahhabists and the Salafists are real, but they are controlled by the CIA, Mossad, so on, so on, so on. The BBC reported this week, didn't it, that possibly thousands of late teen boys radicalised by ISIS are heading into Europe as ISIS retreats. So is that just an unforeseen consequence of some very bad foreign policy by the US and the UK? No, it isn't. It's deliberate. It was always part of it. It's the end game to create chaos in Paris, Belgium, London and Barcelona now and God knows where next. Divide and conquer. Trauma-based, mind-controlled, destroy sovereignty. Ultimately, to make indigenous people the minority in their countries. They will react. It's a long, long, long game. They've been doing it for decades in so many ways. And you know, listening to David Icke's video casts recently, the ones he puts out every Friday, and he's talked a lot about this, where seemingly totally unconnected stories are in fact brother and sister. News stories that look like there's no connection, or even very, very vague, tenuous connections, are in fact central to the agenda. Like the story we covered on this programme last month. Researchers combining 200 studies saying that sperm counts among young men from North America, Europe, Australia and New Zealand have halved in less than 40 years. People saying there might be an extinction event among Caucasians in the future. 185 studies done between 73 and 2011 show that in the Western world, sperm counts have halved. Seemingly unconnected, but it's totally connected to what I've just been talking about. The radicalisation and the behaviour of the conservative Muslims that Sarah Champion talked about in interviews she gave for the BBC and in an article she wrote for The Sun, which led to her resignation from the Labour front bench. This is real, but where it comes from is where people can't get its head round. It's also still in the minority at this point in time, but the plan is for it to be the majority, right? So Sarah Khan writing in the Mail on Sunday saying it is a Muslim problem. Yes, but you know, or she must know anyway, what's really behind Salafist jihadi terrorism. She must do. And maybe some of these people who claim to be representing the Muslim community might exercise some courage and speak out about it. Right? That's where I come from. It's where I've always come from on this issue. I say always. It's where I've ended up having covered this for years. Now, there isn't much else in the papers. It's 18 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. The legendary entertainer Bruce Forsyth passed away on Thursday, or was it Friday? It might have been Friday. Terrific presenter, 7 decades on UK screens. I mentioned that on Facebook. A truly great presenter. He had a good innings, I think, and was involved in some terrific television over the years. That was Bruce Forsyth. I'm going to take another very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about why it's being reported today that 1 in 3 British Jews want to leave the country because of a rise in anti-Semitism. More on that in a minute. This is the Richie Allen Show and Sunday View in association with davidicke.com on richieallen.co.uk and, of course, davidicke.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Now, welcome back. 16 minutes to the top of the hour. Sky News reported today that Jews in the UK are leaving. they're leaving the country because one in three believe that the rise in anti-Semitism in the UK is becoming so bad and will become so bad in the future that they need to get out. I'm going to play you the entire report. So it's about 2 minutes, 20 seconds long, so that nobody can accuse me of selectively editing what Sky put out. This is the Sky News report today. Have a listen.
Well, another news this morning. New figures suggest that almost one in three Jewish people have considered leaving the country due to racism, despite an apparent fall in anti-Semitism.
And more than half of Britain's Jewish population say they feel let down by the institutions that are meant to be there to protect them. When it comes to politics as well in all of this, 83% apparently believe the Labour Party is too tolerant of anti-Semitism. Tamara Cohen reports.
In a cafe in the heart of North London's Jewish community, the conversation has turned to leaving the UK. A survey shows almost one in three British Jews have considered moving abroad because of a rise in anti-Semitism. Mandy Blumenthal, who runs a commercial property business, is already making preparations to relocate to Israel after encountering prejudice.
I come from a very normal British family where my parents were so proud to be British. And I cannot believe that I'm having to do that. But I'm literally scared, not what's going to be in England tomorrow or even next year, but I think within the next 10 years, it will not be tolerable for Jews here.
That's disgraceful, Nat. If you watch the report back, and I've not edited it, I'm going to pick it up now where it leaves off there. That's disgraceful. This Mandy Blumenthal is saying in 10 years it's just going to be unbelievable, the hatred towards Jews. And she was introduced as somebody who is leaving because of what she's encountered. At no point does the reporter ask her to describe the situation that she found herself in that led her to want to leave the UK. Disgraceful crap by Sky News. The report goes on.
According to a large-scale study...
You see, it just moves on, right? Where's the... Ask her why she's leaving. Why? What happened to you, Mandy? But she doesn't.
...scale study by the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism...
Ah! It's the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Right. Thought it might be.
81% of British Jews have considered leaving the UK in the past 2 years. More than a third have concealed their Judaism in public. 65% believe the government doesn't do enough to protect them. And over four-fifths think the Labour Party is too tolerant of anti-Semitism.
Oh, be Jesus.
This is despite a YouGov poll which found that anti-Semitic attitudes in the UK have been in decline for the past 3 years.
Indeed, the YouGov poll found that somewhere between 75% and 90% couldn't give a rat's arse about Jews or anybody else other than themselves. An extensive poll backed up by a number of other organisations as well, Ipso and others. So the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism are lying through their teeth.
The institutions that we rely on to protect our...
This is him, by the way, Gideon Falter.
...our communities are not doing enough. And this is something where we have been talking about it for years and years. And the question is, when are they going to wake up?
You see, the institutions of this country who are not doing anything about it can't do anything about it because it ain't fucking happening. So when you ring up your local police sergeant and you say to him or her, you've got to stop people in the Jewish community being harassed, the sergeant at the desk says, can you give me an example of that? No, I can't. Shut the fuck up then. It isn't happening. It's not happening. It is not happening. But that doesn't stop Sky News. Ask the writer and the campaigner, a woman called Julie Bindel, to weigh in on this. And she makes the, I would say, almost libelous statements about members of the Labour Party and the leader of the opposition. Have a listen.
Now, a few years ago, about 5 years ago, I went to Norway to do a story for a magazine on the disappearing Jews of Norway, where it was found that there were very, very few people who were Jewish and very visibly Jewish. In other words, mainly the religious community.
Mm.
Because it's been a really difficult balance to look at some of the people coming in from countries that are very, very, very angry about the Israeli government and its policies. In my view, rightly so.
Okay, we'll leave it at that then, Julie. Shut up. That's it. People are absolutely cheesed to fuck off with the brutal, apartheid, racist, hateful Israeli government. So they shouldn't blame it on Jews. They should not harass Jews. And in fact, that's not happening. They're just criticizing the Israeli government. And because they're doing that, they're being called racist. She should have left it at that, Julie, but she couldn't help herself.
So, but some very angry young men who do not seem to be able to distinguish between the Jewish diaspora, so Jews that live in whichever country that they've ended up in, and those that live in Israel. And this is a problem, of course, some say, with the Jewish left under Corbyn's regime in the UK.
Under Corbyn's regime? Why didn't she call him Comrade Corbyn? Right. What is that? Now, you would presume that the presenter, Stephen Dixon, would jump right in there like any half-decent presenter and say, Julie, you can't say Corbyn's regime. They are the democratically elected opposition in this country, and they had a pretty good showing in the last election, Julie. So don't refer to them as a regime. Surely that's what Stephen Dixon did, right?
Okay, where there is a slur against Jewish people who speak
no, he didn't,
out
of course.
About their culture and speak out against anti-Semitism.
Because he's useless.
That seems to be conflated with anti-Israeli sentiment. Mm. And so it's understandable that with this conflict going on, and of course the Jewish history of persecution, that some are thinking that they should leave. But this is terrible in the UK after the history that we've witnessed. And of course with Brexit, I mean, my father-in-law, a Jewish man who...
Ah, her father-in-law is Jewish. Now, at this point, Dixon or Isabel Webster, the pretty face that sits alongside Dixon just for effect, you misogynistic fucker, Richie. No, I'm not. They should have said, well, hang on a second, let's go back to the YouGov report, which Mori and Ipso and other organisations endorsed, that says there isn't any anti-Semitism. So, Julie, hang on a second, who's telling the truth? That's what a journalist would do. Julie, we have conflicting reports here. We have the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, led by the moronic Gideon Falter. They represent about six people. They're a charity. Not for long, though. Not for long, though. They're being dealt with. These fascists, the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, are being dealt with. I'll tell you more about that in the coming weeks. In terms of their days of threatening and harassing people who work in businesses are going to be over very soon. Legally, they're going to be dealt with. Tell you more about that anon, as we say. So the presenter should have said, who are these guys? I'm on about the pollsters who are saying there is no anti-Semitism. But anyway, they just carry on.
Who died 2 years ago was responsible for getting Britain into Europe. He was head of the European movement and recognised that one of the benefits of Britain being in Europe was that we wouldn't see this kind of hate crime within the European Union.
Ah, shut up, love. Shut up. Hate crime within the European Union. There's no hatred for Jews. There is none. There is loathing, repulsion, revulsion for the... I'm not going to keep describing them with those adjectives again. What Israel is, what Zionism is. People despise it, but they don't hate Jews. We live with, among, work with, work for Jews. They are our neighbours, our mates. They are not blamed for the Zionist hatred experienced by the Palestinians every day. All the polls say between 75 and 90% of English men and women couldn't be arsed. Don't care one way or the other, sadly. Corbyn's regime, she said, and she wasn't challenged. Where's the balance? Anyway. One more bit of news to bring you. Tens of thousands of anti-racism protesters have opposed the free speech rally in the US city of Boston that featured alt-right speakers. The BBC reported on this. You've probably been following it. It was in Boston. Have a listen.
We can't hear you! It was a day of taunting America's far right. This was their so-called free speech rally that after recent violence many had been worried about. But this was the city's response. A massive counter-protest of Bostonians condemning hate speech and racism.
I am outraged. We have to make a difference. I can't believe in 2017 that we are still marching for rights.
When faced with the option to stand and say what is right and wrong, I can't sit home and keep my views to myself when there's hate out there.
You know, they have certainly have the right to speak, but we also have the right to congregate and to show that we don't support what they have to say.
Yeah, but by doing what you're doing, you're saying they don't have the right to speak. You're not affording them the right to speak. You're trying to shout them down, make it impossible for anybody else to hear them. So that's pretty much anti-free speech, isn't it?
I have to say, and I think the numbers sort of bear that out today.
The two demonstrations, one outnumbering the other by many thousands, were kept apart to prevent trouble. But the far-right demonstrators, often wearing Trump hats, were unapologetic.
Not a racist.
Though that defiance often angered those around.
Well, just one of those so-called free speech protesters has just come out into the crowd. He's had to be escorted by police through this very angry crowd who've come out, who've been chanting anti-racism and anti-Trump slogans.
Ah, the irony of the progressive left coming out in support of free speech while at the same time they are attempting to deny others the right to say what it is they feel and believe, even if they disagree with them. Identity politics. Read Being in Time by Gilad Atzmon. Please read it. And as soon as David Icke's new book hits the shelves, grab it and read it, because they're taking it on, and David Icke is taking it on in a way that it's never been taken on before. And what's really going on here is beyond the grasp of most people. Progressives coming out in favour of free speech while attempting to deny others, those who disagree with them, the right to say what it is they want to say. Of course, if they didn't do that, if the alt-right and the lunatic progressive left, and the alt-right are just as crazy, they're all crazy. If they didn't do that, if they didn't behave like that, and they actually communicated with one another through hustings or through debates at universities, proper ones, and sat down without all the screaming and chanting, they would realise eventually that they have the same enemy. This was Sunday View in association with davidicke.com, richieallen.co.uk and Fab Radio 2. Massive thank you to Aaron Callan and Simon for their help. I'm going to leave you and love you with that. This programme will be on podcast real soon. It'll be on YouTube as well. Got some fantastic guests lined up for you this coming week on The Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. Please join me tomorrow, Monday at 7 p.m. British summertime, if we ever have a summer. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Enjoy your Sunday. Disconnect. Look after yourselves and one another. It's bye from me. Have a great day. Bye now. Bye.
You ask me where I go tonight. I go back to today last year. We knew how to make each other happy, and there was hope of everything. Hard enough to feel the world as it is and hold on anything without these quiet times you've bought round here. I'm gonna have to run away, I'm sure that I belong some other place. I've seen another side of all I've seen, it keeps me wondering. Hard enough to see the world as it is and hold on anything without these quiet times coming round here. And I miss you, and I want you, but I can't have you. You and take you with me, broken mind, I'd rather leave you here. So forget